Hi, this is Brad Linscott again from the Premier Field Engineering Team at Microsoft Support, continuing our series on .NET debugging for the production environment. And today, we're going to get into the debugger a little bit more and talk about some of the more common commands that we use when we're debugging, whether it's a dump of a hang or a crash or what have you. First, we'll talk about symbols. In the previous session that I did, part three, we mentioned symbols a little bit. We're going to talk about them just a little bit more before I go into some of the more, what commands are inside debuggers like WinDBG and CDB. And then we'll focus on what are some of the more common commands that Microsoft Support uses when they take a look at dump files of .NET applications for applications that hang or applications that have exceptions or memory pressure. So first, a note on symbols. In the native world, when we're taking a look at dump files or doing a live debug of a native application that doesn't have .NET in it, we always have to have symbols. What are symbols? A symbol is a PDB file that's created at build time along with the corresponding DLL. And all it does, at a high-level overview, is it translates an address value to a human-readable name, that is, the name of the assembly and the class and the function that is executing, so that when we're taking a look at call stacks, instead of seeing a bunch of addresses, we can actually see which function called which function, so forth and so on, so that the call stack actually makes sense to us, so that we can see, yes, this is where we can see that, for example, function 1 called function 2 called function 3. In the native world, as I said, they're needed in order to resolve your call stacks and get other useful information from them. But in the managed world, we don't need symbols of any kind to go ahead and resolve our managed call stacks. It is very common for call stacks with .NET applications to go back and forth between, say, the native code as well as managed code, and it depends on what your application does. But every thread nowadays is going to start in the native world. So it's going to start with something like kernel 32 or one of those native DLLs. So you will still need public symbols or matching symbols for your native components in order to get a completely resolved call stack from both the native as well as in the native world, and then put that together with where it calls into your managed code and vice versa potentially. But if you're just looking at the managed call stack, there's no need to get matching symbols for just the managed call stack. So what I usually recommend to customers, we almost always don't need symbols from your managed assemblies in order to get good information to help us resolve the issue that you're dealing with and to find root cause from a dump file that we're looking at. But I still recommend that you keep your symbols on your local symbol server just in case they're needed in the future. In the debugger, there's several different ways that you can set your symbol file path. You can do it through the menus, or there are a couple of command lines that you can use if you'd rather use that. I'll go ahead and open up WinDBG. I'll open up a dump file using WinDBG here, since that's the debugger that I'm a little bit more familiar with. You can go to the file, symbol file path, and set your symbol file path that way. You can also use the .sympath command. With no arguments, it simply retrieves the current symbol file path, or you can override it using something like .sympath. Let's say I want to say plus some other file name, ctemp. And then I add ctemp onto my symbol file path. Oh, let's go back. Didn't finish covering one more thing, and that is the actual path to our public symbol server. http://msdl.microsoft.com/download/symbols. It is a mouthful, but since I've been working with dump files for the past 8 or 9 years, it's something that is just ingrained in my memory. If you don't want to remember all this, you can always use the .symfix command, and it will automatically point you to our public symbol server. And if an argument that symfix will take or can take is the local directory where you want to cache your symbols. Now, a brief overview of commands within the production debuggers. There are a couple different kinds of commands. Commands that aren't prefixed with a dot or with an exclamation point are some of the more basic commands in the debugger. So, for example, if you want to take a look at the native call stack, you would use K and just type in K. There are several different variations of K that allow you to get parameters in their values, allow you to get frame numbers or no arguments or the first three arguments. And we'll take a look at the K command later. Another command that is one of the commands that doesn't require a dot or An exclamation point that I use all the time is vertarget, all one word. And what that does is that pulls for me the operating system from which the dump was taken, as well as the time that the dump was taken corresponding to the time zone, and also how long the process had been up before it was dumped and how long the system has been running. And I use that command quite frequently. Another one that I use a lot is the thread command, which is tilde. Anything that you want to do related to native threads, you'll use the tilde command. Then there are meta commands that are, you start with a dot and then you'll go ahead and type the name of the command. These commands enhance debugger functionality. If I want to go ahead and load a debugging extension, I'll use the dot load command. If I wanted to remote out a debugging session so I can have a teammate look at it with me, I would use the dot server command to go ahead and remote out my dump file so that my teammate can do that. There is .hh, which I'll use every once in a while, and I'll show you here in a little bit. The .hh command, when followed by a particular command that the debuggers know about, will open up the help file for the debugging tools for Windows package, and it'll point you right to the location in the help file for the command that you passed as an argument to .hh. And then there are extension commands. Extension commands are prepended with an exclamation point that we always call bang, because that's a lot shorter and easier than saying exclamation point all the time. So depending on what extension that you've loaded and how many extensions you have loaded, which ones are there, you can run the commands from those extensions using bang and then the name of the command that you want to go ahead and run. We've talked about in the previous part of this series SOS and the PSS cores that are probably the most popular debugging extensions for managed code. Some of the more common commands from those extensions we'll talk about later today. We would always prepend that with an exclamation point to get whatever data that we're pursuing from the dump file. What are some of the more common miscellaneous commands that we might use from a dump file? I oftentimes will use the pipe command, especially if I've got a teammate that says, hey Brad, I've got an issue here, can you help me look at this dump file? And whether they send it to me or they remote it out, one of the things I always will do is just run the pipe command to make sure that I understand the name of the process that we're troubleshooting. It's very common for us in Microsoft support to take a look at dumps of ASP.NET applications, so a w3wp.exe is very common. And it also helps to set some of the context as to what I'm looking at and what I can expect in terms of the kind of GC that might be used or other objects that might be in play. And as I said earlier, vertarget is a command that will show me the time in which the dump was taken, the operating system version, as well as how long the process has been up and when was the last time that the server was rebooted. So in this example on the screen, what we see is we've got a dump that was taken on July 29th, 2008 at GMT-5 time zone. The whole machine had been up for, looks like, 6 hours and 19 minutes, and the process had been running for 4.5 hours before it was dumped. It was taken off of a 2003 machine that had two processors, and it was a 32-bit process. When you open a dump file, pretty much any dump file that I've ever looked at, or at least a full dump as opposed to a mini dump, this information a lot of times will be right there at the top of the dump whenever you open it. Other common miscellaneous commands, anytime you want to load an extension, you can use the .load command. There's an option for other extensions like SOS or PSS Core where you can also use .load by, but I always use .load because it just requires less characters for me to type and I'm kind of lazy, so that's what I use. I keep a lot of my extensions in the same directory as my debuggers so that I don't have to type in the full path of the extension that I want to load. So for example, I keep PSS Core 2 and PSS Core 4 in my debuggers directory, so all I have to do is type a .load on PSS Core 2 or PSS Core 4 and they load. If I want to unload an extension, there have been times in the past where maybe I had a difficult time getting the right version of the DAC that we talked about in the previous part of this series loaded for my PSS Core 2 or PSS Core 4. Sometimes I like to kind of clear the slate, so to speak, without shutting down my whole debugging session. So what I'll do is I'll unload some of my PSS cores and then start over again. And I use the .unload command to unload my extension. There may be times where just doing a .unload on, if I loaded it, say by saying .load PSS Core 2.dll, Maybe just doing a .unload on PSS core 2.dll won't do it, and I have to use the whole path and file name, so be aware of that. And then the .chain command is very common, especially when you're trying to troubleshoot why certain extensions aren't loading correctly. .chain will show you all the extensions that you have loaded, with the one at the bottom of the list being the first one that was loaded. And you can see here that when I ran .chain in this example, I have PSS core 2. It's loaded directly from my debugger's x86 directory, and I've got a build and timestamp on that as well. So I use .chain a lot when I'm working with customers to troubleshoot why certain extensions will or won't load, and I don't necessarily know what they've tried before I got involved to help them. Bang help. Most extensions that you load will have their own help function for them, but not all of them. It's totally up to the developer of the extension as to whether or not they include a bang help, but most of the good extensions do have a help command. So running bang help will display help for the topmost extension. Going back to the previous slide, some might ask, well, if most extensions have a bang help, then how do I determine if I run bang help by default in this particular output, I'm going to get the help for PSS core 2. But what if I wanted the help file for dbg help, or the help output for ext, or any of the other extensions that are here in my .chain command but are not topmost? In that particular case, what I'd want to do is I'd want to prepend, instead of just bang help, I want to do bang and then the name of the extension and then .help. And that will give me the help, whatever help information my extension of choice provides. So if I have, let's say, PSS Core 2 and PSS Core 4 loaded, and PSS Core 4 was loaded most recently, but I wanted the help for PSS Core 2, then I would type bang PSS Core 2.help, where the X here represents a number, whether it's 2 or 4. The .hh command, I use this quite frequently, especially just to peruse the help file. Whenever you pass an argument to .hh, it will open up the help file for the debugging tools for Windows package, and it will take you right to the particular command topic. So, for example, if I wanted to take a look at help for k or any other command, I would do .hh on k. This isn't going to work for any custom extensions or extensions like PSS Core 2 or 4 that don't come with the debugging tools for Windows package. Only for tools that come with that package and that the help file will document. Bang PEB is another common command that we use, and it gives you a lot of information about the process environment blocks, such as modules and their paths that are loaded into the process, environment variables and their values, the command line argument, and more. I'll take a look, and I told you that I'd take a look at the .hh command, so I'll take a look at .hh on, we'll say, k. It brings up the debugging tools for Windows help file right to the k command here. And there I've got the various output for K. And I use that every now and then as well. Some other common miscellaneous commands, bang runaway. Bang runaway is a common command that you use when you have a high CPU issue, but there are times where I like to see, even though my dump file may have been created and it has nothing to do with high CPU, I may just want to see how much quanta each particular thread has consumed since it was spawned. So bang runaway will show you the amount of CPU that each thread has consumed in descending order so that you can get an idea of which threads were using the most CPU. If it's a high CPU issue, then you can go navigate to those threads and see what the call stack looks like. If the dump was taken during the high CPU, you've got a good chance at determining which function or functions were causing the high CPU. The tilde command. If you just run the tilde by itself, it'll give you the process ID as well as the thread ID. Tilde and then followed by a number and then S for set will actually switch the active thread from whichever thread you were on to the thread that you put in the command. So, for example, if I'm on thread 0, in this sample here on the screen, it shows the prompt shows me I'm at thread 0. If I wanted to switch to thread 2, I would do a tilde 2S, and that would switch me to thread 2. A note about some of the output from just tilde. The first one here in red, this is what I call the logical thread ID, and this is the ID that we commonly will refer to if I'm looking at a dump with a teammate or with a customer and we're talking about what different threads are doing. Also, we'll take a look at thread 46, and this is the number over here in the tilde output that I'm referring to when I say thread 46. The purple number here, this is the process ID. So from a user mode dump file, if you run tilde, every single thread in there will have the same process ID. The blue number, this is a hexadecimal thread ID. This one can be very key to take a look at If you're troubleshooting an issue whereby you took a series of dump files, whether it's a high CPU hang or a low CPU hang, or even growing memory, and you want to see what certain threads are doing in your series of dump files, let's say you took three dumps and you open each dump in its own WinDBG session, you want to make sure, if you focused in on a particular thread of interest, you want to make sure that you use this hexadecimal thread ID from dumps 1 and 2 as well as 3. Because if you're dealing with a process that spins up and spins down down threads, such as a W3WP, this first thread ID over here, what I'm calling the logical thread ID, can change frequently. So what shows up in the first dump as thread 52 may not be thread 52 in the second dump. It may be thread 50 or 49. Same thing with dump number 3. So what you want to do is pay attention to this hexadecimal thread ID. So if it's thread 2048 in this example in dump number 1, and it shows up as a logical thread of, instead of 0 in this case, if it's thread 50, when you look at that, the dump of that same process instance that was taken maybe a minute or two later, or whatever your time frame was, and you want to look for, I want to find, I know that, say, my thread in dump 1, my thread 2048, was doing such and such activity. I want to see what it was doing in the second dump. Make sure you look at this this hexadecimal thread ID that you get from the tilde command, because the simple thread numbers over here can change from dump to dump. The green number here, this is the address of the thread environment block that is similar to the process environment block, but it gives you information just about the thread and not the entire process. Continuing on miscellaneous commands, K is a very common command. K is a command that we use to get our native call stacks. There are several variations, as you can see here. KN provides a frame number, whereas KB provides you the addresses of the first three arguments. If you have private symbols, KP can get you parameter information as well as the values for those parameters, and KP outputs it a different way. I'll take a look at some of these right now. Let me switch over to a particular thread here. Let me try thread 0, okay? And I'll do a quick K. So I don't have good symbols here for this system.windows.forms.native image. This is whenever I see this associated with CLR.dll. In this case, I'm dealing with the 4.0 application. This tells me that I've got some managed code near the top of this call stack. I'm not running a managed command right now from SOS or the PSS cores. I'm just running a K for demonstration purposes. Now, if I run a KB, you're going to see some more information here that you didn't see previously, and that's the addresses to the first three arguments. There's my return address, and then my arguments are going to be 1, 2, and 3. We'll take a look at KN. KN adds frame numbers to the frames, the call frames here in this call stack. So remember, with our call stacks, we're always starting from the bottom. This is the first function in the call in the this particular thread. RTL user thread start called base thread init thunk, so forth and so on, going up the call chain. If you have a long call stack, it can be kind of difficult to talk with a teammate, or if I'm talking with a customer, to pay attention to certain frames in the call stack, so KN helps out with that. If I have private symbols, I can use KP, which I don't have private symbols. I'm using the public symbol server, and if I did have private symbols, this would show me parameter information as well as the values of those parameters. If I don't want to have the addresses here at the beginning, whether it's the return address or my child pointer here, what I'd want to do then is do a KC, and that gives me just my call stack with no ugly addresses at the beginning. So I encourage folks just to be curious about what's available with the debuggers by reading the help file. What if I want to see the managed call stack? In that case, I want to use something from SOS or the PSS cores called BangCLRStack, and this is going to output for me just the managed call stack. We'll take a look at that real quick. Bang CLR stack. And I don't have my extension loaded correctly. So we can take this as an opportunity to take a look at Bang Chain. We've already said this is a 4.0 application, and I do not have PSS Core loaded, Core 4 loaded. So I'm going to go ahead and do a dot load for PSS Core 4.dll. Some of you may notice that it looks like bangclr stack ran, but it had an error here. And the reason it ran is because I already have PSS Core 2 loaded. I work with customers that still are using a lot of .NET 2.0, so I automatically load that in my debugging session, and I don't have PSS Core 4 loaded by default. So I'm going to go ahead and load PSS Core 4 and run bangclr stack. And there we go. This is my managed call stack for this particular thread, to where I can take a look at some of the managed calls that are being made. So now we're getting into the part of today's talk where we talk about commands that can be helpful for specific problem definitions. I already talked about the K command for hangs and crashes a lot of times. I want to take a look, especially hangs, I want to take a look at the call stack for all the threads. One way to do that is you could run, I'm on thread 0, I can do a K here, then I can do my tilde 1 switch or set there and get thread 1 active and do a K there. This gets kind of tedious, especially if you've got a process with lots and lots of threads. I can even shorten this a little bit by saying tilde 2s and then separate that command with a K. So in one command, I switch to thread 2, and then I'll also get the call stack there, but this can be really tedious. One command that will give me all the call stacks is tilde star for all K, and that automatically outputs the native call stack for all the threads in my process. Same thing on the managed call stack. If I want to use bangclr stack, this time it's you use the E command for all and an extension. So I would do a tilde star E and then bangclr stack. If I wanted to get, for those of you who are familiar with the PSS cores, if I wanted to get all the managed objects on all the call stacks, then I would do a tilde star E bang DSO to dump out all the objects on the stack. And we'll get into that later as well for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar with the PSS cores or SOS. For a hang, it's not uncommon sometimes for a hang, the root cause of a hang to be a particular sync block on which other threads are waiting, and because they're waiting for the sync block, they're not responding, and that could be the root cause of the hang. So bang sync block from the PSS cores and SOS will go ahead and find all the sync blocks on which other threads in the process are waiting. Here's some sample output where we can see we've got two particular sync blocks on which other threads are waiting. This first one has an index of 3724. And it is protecting a system.string, and we've got all these other threads here waiting on that particular resource. We've got another sync block here on which four other threads are waiting. The number here that's under recursion, what that number represents, if you subtract one from that number and divide it by two, that's the number of threads that are waiting on your particular resource. So if you've got a sync block output where the output for the waiting threads just goes on and on and on, and you want to know without having to count each one, take the recursion number, subtract one from it, and divide by two, and that is going to be the number of threads that are waiting on that particular sync block. Another common command for troubleshooting hang issues is bang finalize queue. This is another function from SOS or the PSS core extensions, and this command will list objects that are registered for finalization. And when you're looking at this command, don't focus so much on how many objects are finalizable in generation 0, 1, or 2. What you want to focus on is a line that says ready for finalization, certain number of objects. If that number is greater than 0, then you've got a problem that you need to investigate. This indicates that your finalizer thread, and there's only one of them in a process that has the .NET framework loaded, is either backlogged or it might be completely blocked. In this particular case, I had a dump from a customer in which over 150,000 objects were waiting for finalization. So this is a clear indication that we've got a blocked finalizer. So this is the thread that I'm going to focus on. I need to find my finalizer thread and see why it's blocked. It may be running some code. Somebody may have had a finalizer in their code that went out and made a call to a database, and they used a bad connection string, or they made some kind of synchronous call that is just waiting to return. So we always want to take a look at the finalizer thread when we see something like this. Well, how do we tell which thread in the process is the finalizer thread, because there's only one of them? There's a couple different ways that you can do this. Number one, you can run the bang threads command from whether you have the PSS cores loaded or SOS to see which thread is the finalizer thread. The output actually points it out to you. You can also do it using the native K command if you know what you're looking for. So let's take a look at, in this case, I'll take a look at bang threads. And we see here on the right, it tells me that my finalizer thread is thread 0. I'm sorry, thread 4. So if I take a look at thread 4, which is the currently active thread, and I do a K command, we'll see here that we've got a call here to GC heap, finalizer thread start. That's the indication that we are dealing with the finalizer thread. We'll move on to exceptions. What are some of the more common commands if we want to debug an exception? Bang DAE from the PSS cores will display all the managed exceptions in the GC heaps. It stands for dump all exceptions. And it'll give you a count of each type of exception that is still alive in the dump file. A lot of times when people take a look at this, they get a little nervous when they see an out-of-memory exception or Stack Overflow exception or an execution engine exception. And we can take a look at that right here by looking at bang DAE. And sure enough, I'll see up here an out-of-memory exception, a Stack Overflow exception. They think, oh my gosh, I've got an out-of-memory exception. These objects are created whenever the process starts up, because if you get into a situation to where you have no more memory, we may not have enough memory to create an out-of-memory exception object. So they're always created ahead of time, and then they're just populated with fields if you do actually have a real out-of-memory issue. The one way you can double-check this is to take the address of the object, and you can dump it out using SOS or PSS cores DO command, pass the address. And if you see that the fields are all zeros, well, then you know this is the object that was created on startup but hasn't actually been populated yet. Using bang PE for print exception, you can either pass the address of an exception object or you don't have to pass the address of the exception object. We'll give you more information on a specific managed exception. If you don't pass an address value to this command, it's assuming that there's a currently active exception on the thread that is currently active. If there is no exception on the currently active thread, then it'll tell you, hey, look, I don't have an exception on this particular thread. So you can always pass an address to the object, to the command, to get more information about a particular exception. In this case, if I just do a bang PE, there is no managed exception on this thread. So that's an example of when you would need to pass an address in order to get more information about a particular exception object. To a large extent, debugging exceptions on the managed world is very similar to debugging exceptions for the native world. You want to make sure that you get the dump file right when the exception is thrown. We talked about in the previous part three of this series how tools like Debug Diag can help you to automate that process, because if you try to do it manually, you're almost assured to fail. You want to find the thread that has the exception, and you want to investigate the exception. The tools by which we use to investigate that exception may be different in the managed world. It's going to be one of your PSS cores, depending on the version of the framework that you're using, or if you want to use SOS, you can do that. And in the native world, you can't use, obviously, a managed extension to debug a native exception. So upon opening the dump file on a managed exception, there's a thread that is already, the currently active thread in the dump file is the thread on that had the exception. If you need to take a look at some deeper analysis of the exception because your call stack may not give you enough information, for example, let's say that the call stack for your exception shows that you have a problem on a particular function, but the issue is that function may have hundreds of lines of code in it. So how do we know which particular line of code had the problem? You can use the PSS cores bang U for a deeper analysis of the disassembly to get an idea where inside that function you had the exception. In native debugging skills, it's not uncommon to have to use native debugging skills to determine root cause for managed exceptions, because especially if you're dealing with applications that have some COM interop, the problem may go back into the COM world, in the native world, and you need to utilize some native exceptions there as well. So if you run into that, that's one of those instances where you may need to tag a buddy who knows how to do some native exceptions, or brush up on the skills yourself in order to learn how to find root cause of your problem. For memory pressure, whenever I get a dump of a managed memory issue, and these are probably the most common types of issues that we see in a production application for .NET, I always run bang address first. This is one of my favorite commands. This is not from the PSS cores. This is from one of the extensions that's inside, and that comes with the debugging tools from Windows package, and it's automatically loaded into your debugging extension. Into your debugging session. It shows a lot of different information about the state of the virtual address space and the process that you're debugging. It breaks down memory into different types, protections, state, or usage. And one thing I usually focus on is to take a look at the top and to take a look here at some of the output. This output is actually from one of the older builds of the debuggers that I know some customers still have in their environments, because it says region usage is VAD for virtual address. Some time ago, maybe a year or two ago, this was changed to unknown. This mostly will represent memory that is allocated from calls, direct calls to virtual alloc, but there's other ways that memory can get allocated into the unknown or the VAD region as well. I want to take a look at how much memory is free. In this particular case, this is a snapshot of a dump that we had over a gig free, which means this process was not under, seemingly not under a lot of memory pressure because there was a gig. This is a 32-bit process, so you got 2 gig of memory in the virtual address space. If I have a gig free, I'm probably thinking I'm okay. But when I take a look down here at the bottom where it shows me my largest contiguous free region is only 58 meg, that tells me this is a dump from a process that is severely fragmented. To have a gig free, but only 58 meg is my largest contiguous free, that can be a big problem, especially with .NET applications. Other common commands for managed memory pressure. A managed leak, or what we call memory pressure or bloat, is usually in one of two places. It could be in the loader heaps, which is where type definitions for your structures are. More commonly, it's in the GC heaps, where you actually create your objects from where they're stored, whether they're in generation 0, 1, 2, or the large object heap. And bang EE heap is a very common command to use when chasing managed memory issues to get an idea of how much memory is in a particular heap. Sometimes you may see that your heaps are unbalanced, and that can give you a clue as to maybe where you need to look in your application. And as I said, we'll talk about the loader heaps here. It's a common, they contain type definitions and other internal structures. My experience with debugging applications in the 32-bit world is that if my loader heaps, and I can tell the total size by running bang EE heap dash loader, if they're around 20 meg or so, that's usually considered high for a web application. I do a lot of debugging with ASP.NET applications. So for W3WP in the 32-bit world, about 20 meg or so in the managed heaps is considered pretty big. I have seen larger. I've seen some that are over 100 meg, which means that there's lots and lots of objects. They may be small objects, but the volume of them, the count of them, is very high in the process. Bang DDA, which stands for Dump Dynamic Assemblies. If this results in too many assemblies, which is kind of a vague definition, I know, it's always relative. If this results in, say, a rough number might be 500 or so, or more assemblies, we need to find out why these dynamic assemblies are being created. This could be the root cause of your problem. I've worked with customer issues to where running bang DDA shows me that there are 1,000 dynamic assemblies, and that's obviously a clue to me that this could be directly the sole root cause of their high memory pressure issue. But the DDA output will also show you the size of each assembly. So if you've only got, say, 200 dynamic assemblies, but each one of them is a meg or so, then obviously that's a problem that needs to be investigated, why so many dynamic assemblies are being created and why they're so large. Bang dump domain will list assemblies loaded in each app domain. So an app domain, as most of you know, is a logical structure within the physical boundary of the process. In ASP.NET, by default, each particular ASP.NET application will get loaded into its own app domain. So if I've got a W3WP, if I've got a pool that has, so for example, 9 applications, I expect to see at least 9 app domains in there. And it will list me the assemblies. Just running bang dump domain will show me the assemblies that are loaded in each particular domain. Bang dump domain dash stat will just give me statistics, a very one-line summary of statistics on each app domain. I use bang find debug true in a lot of my ASP.NET applications because still today I will find instances in which there are some assemblies loaded into the process that were built in debug mode. And this can be, especially when ASP.NET was first released many, many years ago, for many customers, this was the sole root cause of their high memory pressure issue. They had compilation debug. I may have had a misspeak there. I don't mean assemblies that were built in debug mode, but rather the config file setting compilation debug is equal to true needs to be set to false in release so that we can have things like batch compilation enabled, and we're not compiling one assembly for each and every ASCX, ASPX, so forth and so on. I've listed a couple of Q articles that are a little bit old, but I still find that sometimes they come into play. They relate to XML serializer and XML XSLT issues in which the virtual address space of the target exe might be bloated depending on what coding patterns were taking place with those particular objects. So if you look in our knowledge base on those particular Q articles, you'll find more information on those issues. Bang EE heap dash GC, talked earlier about how the loader heaps can get bloated. They also include some dynamic assemblies. Well, a lot of times the issue for managed memory pressure is in the managed heaps, and you can find out more about that by running bang eheap-gc. It breaks down the memory usage among the different generations within the garbage, the GC heaps, and it helps you to focus on should I be looking at objects that are in the large object heap or in generation 2. Chances are if you've got a GC heap issue, it's going to be either in the large object heap or gen 2, not gen 0 or gen 1. Dumpheap-stat may help because dumpheap-stat will show you all the managed objects that are live in the process, and it sorts them according to the total amount of memory that any particular type consumes. So if I run a bang dumpheap-stat on this guy, we see here that the object that is consuming the most memory is I've got 452 instances of system.byte arrays that total 250K, roughly. Obviously, this is not a process that's under memory pressure, but just displaying the command here. It is very common to have byte arrays, object arrays, and strings down towards the bottom. Everybody has different ways that they analyze dump files. Because they're so common, because a lot of objects have members that are strings or of type object array or byte array, I will tend to look for objects that are a little bit more unique, and that helps me to chase down where maybe those guys are possibly rooted in the process. Bang CLR usage is another helpful command. This tells me how much memory was allocated on process startup. Dash V can also help determine which regions might be in reserved only state as opposed to reserved and some committed. A lot of times what I'll do when I have a managed memory issue, I want to determine right off the bat, is my issue a native issue, a non.NET issue, or a managed issue? And I'll compare the output of bang address. And if bang address shows me that the region unknown or the region is VAD, if you have an older build of the debuggers, is where most of my memory is, I'll compare that to bang CLR usage dash V to see is the size that bang CLR usage shows me, is that going to be roughly equivalent or close to approaching the unknown region in bang address, or if you have the older debuggers, region is VAD? If so, then I know I've got a .NET issue. But if the unknown region shows me that it's got, say, in a 32-bit process, 1.2 gig, but bang CLR usage shows me 384 meg, then I know my issue is not with .NET, because .NET's only responsible for about 384 meg of that 1.2 gig in the unknown or the region is VAD from bang address. I need to figure out who else is calling virtual alloc or where else this memory is, but it's not going to be in .NET. So the conclusion. There are tons and tons of commands out there. This presentation went on a little bit longer than I expected to, and I could go on for hours talking about the different commands, but these are some of the ones that I've covered are just some of the ones that are a little bit more common that we use very frequently in Microsoft support when we're debugging .NET issues. I always encourage folks to be very curious, look through the help file, use bang help with PSS Core 2 and PSS Core 4 to look at all the different commands and see what they have to offer. One of the unique things about the help in PSS Core is that if you just run bang help, it shows you just the commands. But if you run bang help space and then the name of a command, it'll give you more detailed information on most of those commands that way. And then, as with a lot of things that you're learning, practice, practice, practice. The more you practice, the more you're going to learn, the less you're going to forget. So until next time, thanks for joining.